Good evening and welcome to another episode of the Padded Room Podcast Outpatient Files. As usual, my name is still Darian, and joining me tonight is a young man that needs no introduction from me. It's Mr. Mike P. Nelson. Mr. Nelson, how are you this evening?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Good. May I call you Mike?
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Cool. Now, inmates, you probably don't know the name Mike P. Nelson just yet, but you will very soon, and you're going to thank me personally for introducing him to you, because he is the writer, director, and sometimes actor, and you'll know his name from the upcoming feature film, The Domestics. Mike, let me be the first to congratulate you on a job well done with The Domestics.
Oh, man, thanks so much. That means a lot.
That is a great movie, my friend. I've got a great many questions for you about The Domestics. I don't want to give too much away about the plot just yet, though. I was lucky enough to get an advanced screener, and I found it to be a lot like a heady mix of The Purge meets Mad Max. Were any of these influences on the writing process?
You know, when I was writing it, one thing that I'm not the one to be shy about the fact that the 1979 Mad Max has been a huge influencer in just the stuff, the movies I like and want to make.
Very cool.
So I think for me, you know, for the most part, it was definitely that world, and I think that was something that what was so cool about what George Miller did in that first outing was he made this world that didn't feel like it was too far gone. You know, I know in like Road Warrior and Beyond Thunderdome and then Fury Road, I mean, it's like desolate, you know, deserts and craziness like that. But
right. What's
so interesting about that first movie is how everything just kind of everything's normal, or it seems normal for the most part. But everything's a little off, you know what I mean? And for the most part, it's the people that have gone bad.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, that's the most interesting and most exciting idea behind the movie. And so for me, I was like, I want to make my story. I want to make a story that, like, you know, does something similar to that and, like, do my take on what my vision of a sort of, like, pulpy serial post-apocalyptic world would be. And so that's kind of, you know, that was initial thought. And then when it came down to what the story should be, it was like, well, shoot, like, you know, I've now been married for, gosh, going on eight years now.
Wow.
And you know, at the time I'd been married for three, and I was like, man, you know, being married, it's challenging. It's, you know, there's a lot going on, and I wanted to write a story about the challenges of marriage, but I just wanted to do it in this really violent post-apocalyptic way. That's kind of, those are really the influencers, the really big ones. And then of course, you know, you got Warriors and
right.
and you know, Night of the Comet and all that kind of stuff that, you know.
Right. Well, I think
always there.
You definitely succeeded in that, my friend. Since we're on the topic, I feel like The Domestics fits into so many subgenres and categories. Which genre would you put it in exactly?
You know, I mean, it's got a little bit of horror. It's got a lot of action. It's got, you know, it's kind of thriller.
Yeah.
You know, I like giving it the action horror moniker.
Okay.
Like, because I feel like, you know, for me, you know, I'm a huge horror nut. I'm a huge, you know, action movie, revenge, exploitation movie nut.
Totally.
And so, like, you know, having those two worlds combined for me is kind of like, man, that's exciting. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Absolutely.
So,
and you did a great job combining the two and not making it feel like another Lethal Weapon movie. You know, I feel like when we go to post-apocalyptic land, it's so easy to just throw in those cheesy one-liners and gratuitous explosions and things like that. Not that your movie doesn't have some gratuitous explosions, my friend, but you can really just turn that into the backbone of your movie, and then you don't really have much of a movie. And I'm glad that you succeeded in not doing that, because I think your movie is that much better because you have an actual story here, and which is something that I enjoyed tremendously.
Yeah, you know, again, it was about, you know, it was about creating a real backbone to the fun of the movie, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, being able to watch, you know, a couple people, you know, whether you like them or not, but if you can care about them or see some of yourself in them,
mm-hmm.
what goes on around them, or the things that they have to go through, I think it can be that much more exhilarating and terrifying. And, you know, that was a huge thing, was making that be the kind of central focus, is this relationship. You know, but then making sure that, like, everybody else, so, like, you have this relationship, they're the main characters, but you can't just let everybody else kind of fly by as being just sort of like these kind of flat, just, oh, these guys have some cool masks on.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was, like, the big rule no-no, like, when I was making this, was, when I was writing this movie, it was like, if I'm going to introduce a character, I'm going to make you feel like you know them, even if they don't say much at all. I want you to get a sense of, like, a texture of, like, you know, what they probably ate for dinner that day. You know what I mean? Like,
right.
or what their favorite music is, or you know, where, or what the last words they said were before we met them. It's about finding that texture in each of those characters, and, like, not just putting a cool costume on or making a creepy guy walk into a room. It's like getting a sense of who everybody is, even if they get just, like, 5 to 10 minutes of screen time.
It's oh, totally.
So important, and I feel like it takes movies and it sets them apart from each other. You know what I mean? Like, when you can dive in and really get that sense of texture and who these people are.
Yeah, absolutely. I think you did a great job with that, my friend.
Thank you.
Now,
it was a fight.
Yeah, I could imagine. Let me ask you this, and I imagine you're probably going to get this question a lot. Without giving too much away, there's one character who, at the beginning of the movie, I found to be completely unlikable. And this may just be my own perception, mm-hmm. but at one particular scene, and I got a good feeling that you know exactly who and what I'm about to say, in one particular scene that involved heavy metal music, she turned on a dime and became my hero of the movie. Was that your intention, or was that just me being a lunatic?
Nope. It's not you being a lunatic at all. you know, listen, it's a tough move. It can sometimes be a risky move to start off a movie with somebody who, you know, is a little bit harder to like. But ultimately, I feel like there's so much growth that can happen with somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying that you can't have somebody who is incredibly likable at the beginning grow and you like them more, but it was sort of this thing that I wanted to try. Like, okay, what are we going to do with this character who is in this spot where everybody's like, oh, come on, no. And then finally we're like, yes, you're fucking awesome. You know what I mean? Like, to me, like, it was something that I wanted to try to do, see if I could do it. And, you know, I you know, again, like, it's whether it works or not is kind of up to the masses, but it was definitely something that, you know, I was playing around with, and I feel like could show such a potent arc within a character and ultimately make you fall in love with them, much like, you know, the couple in the movie is, like, trying to fall back in love. It's just,
right.
You know, relationships are hard.
Oh, I agree completely, sir. Very cool. And the juxtaposition of that scene with what was happening a few doors down, I found that opposite scene to be very David Lynchian in a weird way. Was that an influence with that character? And if you know who I'm talking about?
Oh, do I ever.
Okay, good.
So that scene was sort of my cinephile ode to like cinephile.
Okay.
Where, you know, you have this character who, you know, I don't want to get too much into it, who, you know, mentions a couple films,
right.
And gets a smart aleck comment back, and mm-hmm. it was really meant to be this sort of, you know, that, and then this sort of really unnerving, unsettling moment, to just kind of come out of nowhere.
Oh, totally.
And me, that's what makes that scene so fun, because you're going through the movie and you're just like, it's gangs and it's gangs mm-hmm. and it's gangs. And you're like, okay, so great. What's the next one? Oh, no, this isn't a gang. This is something totally different. And it was at time in the movie to do that, to throw a wrench in the plan and make people, laugh too. Laugh and feel very uncomfortable.
Oh, totally. Especially when when the door opens and you see who's waiting behind it, it's like, oh no, this is a big problem.
David, who we got, and again, I don't want to get too into it, but David, just wonderful.
Oh, like, he pulled off creepy.
We just had so much fun making a maniac day. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I could tell. And he took creepy to a whole other level right there. Very cool, sir.
Yeah.
What about the, I don't want to get too much into it, but there's a very almost out of place, picturesque family that resides in the middle of this movie. And, again, mm-hmm. it kind of takes you out of the element, because you think, how did this one family survive, leading what seems to be an almost perfect suburban lifestyle? And then as we get to know that family a little bit better, we realize, well, there's actually something very wrong here. But, Was that family? I feel like that family could be a movie in and of itself. Was that family influenced by any other particular movies or writings or any historical events or anything like that? I kind of feel like we've seen them before, perhaps in a different perspective.
Sure. I mean, I'd be lying if I said that, you know, every single little thing in this movie is 100% original. It is a lot from, you know, I would say just my love of watching movies and taking things that I love from movies and, you know, and giving it my own spin and it's also about, you know, figuring out, you know, what is actually, you know, being a villain mm-hmm. in this world. You know what I mean? And ultimately, like, I feel like at the end of the day, where, you know, there's some really weird stuff going on there with, you know, with that family, they're ultimately not bad guys, and I never wrote them that, you know, I never wanted them to be that way. I think I wanted to make you think that they were, but ultimately, just like Mark and Nina, they're there to survive.
Right.
And, you know, and then, you know, you have a little bit of redemption, you know, of course, later on with them, but to me, I love toying around with that question of, you know, what is being a bad guy in this world? And I think there's some very obvious bad guys in the movie.
Right.
And then I think there's, you know, a couple that are like, well, no, they're not a bad person. You know what I mean? They're just, are doing things a little differently in this world than what we would do, if nothing had happened. So,
right.
I mean, you know, yes. Were there influences? Absolutely. I couldn't pinpoint one for you.
Okay.
I know I've seen something similar like that, but ultimately I wanted to make a scene like that.
Okay.
That was actually, and I don't, I hope this doesn't get too much away, but was literally gore free.
Yeah. Yeah. It was.
And
no,
me, that imposed a challenge, because I feel, you know, you're writing and you're like, how do I do this to make this interesting, but, you know, also give the people what they want. You know what I mean? Give,
right.
Like, you get that candy in there.
Right.
And I feel like I landed on something that, you know, that did that. And that to me was something that was, I think, really exciting and a fun exploration.
Yeah, absolutely. And it was it was kind of a shocker as they were having the dialogue while they were doing the dishes. And I don't want to give too much away, but it started off very friendly and jovial, and then it just went worse in a little bit, and he's being very ambiguous. And then it becomes very clear what's actually going on there. So you did a very, very good job of keeping that card close to your vest, I would say. Well done with that. And well done for catching me off guard, because you definitely got me on that one.
Well, that's good.
Something else
I'm glad. You know, that's all part of it, you know?
It's totally.
Part of, you know, pulling some tricks out of your hat here and there and getting that reaction.
Yeah, totally. Something else I wanted to ask you was that... You already mentioned the word post-apocalypse, so I'm going to go ahead and pull that card right now. But the cool thing about this movie is that it picks up like the day after whatever happened happened. And you made some very careful allusions as to what may or may not have happened to trigger that. I think it was, what's his name, Crazy Al on the radio said a few things about the government. You never really came out and said what exactly it was that happened. Was that a political choice or a creative choice, or is that something you're just keeping in your back pocket for now?
You know, I've always had an idea of what happened, and I kind of wanted to be a little elusive about it.
Okay.
And you know, at one point there was a draft of the script where I didn't say anything.
Oh.
And you know, obviously there were some creative differences there with you know, with the studio and producers that I was working with, that, mm-hmm. you know, I found something that I could put in there to help just give you a taste, but still have like this idea of like, oh, I'm not going to tell you everything because I don't think it's super important, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. I know some people are going to hate me for that, but I'm totally fine with that because it's the kind of storytelling I prefer.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, for me, you know, being elusive in the beginning, and I feel like, you know, this is a story that happened like a year to 3 years after whatever happened.
Okay.
So there's a little bit of time, there's a little bit of like crustiness around, but everything is for the most part still okay. Like things, buildings are still standing, everything's like, you know, still up, and you know, there's still some things happening.
Right.
You know, really when it came down to it, It was about, you know, again, keeping a little secret and realizing that the characters are not going to sit down this, you know, this time. They've already had this conversation,
right,
about what they think happened.
Mm-hmm.
So to me, putting a scene of exposition with characters talking about all this junk was so uninteresting to me. Like, it was like, I want to make this story about these people who this movie could translate into a drama if it wanted to.
Oh,
but
totally.
It's just more fun being in this world, you know what I mean? So
mm-hmm.
it was less about getting into this like political exposition about this and that and all this like tiresome, you know, bullshit.
Right.
And focusing in on like what's at the core and trying to figure out what these people want and what they're actually fighting for.
Absolutely. Very cool. I can't let you go without asking about the last, I don't know, 10 minutes of this movie, which appeared to me to be on crack cocaine. What were your influences for the big finale there? I have to know.
You know, I remember when we sat down with the team and then was talking with the AD and our stunt guy Nick Gillard and the producers and I was just like, I just want to kind of create chaos. You know, I want to be able to hold on shots long enough so I'm not doing like, I don't want to do like a Bourne Identity thing where every 10 frames I cut.
Right.
Because that's not what I like to do to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to be able to hold and see things happening, but also create this feeling of chaos and like anxiety. And you never know where, you know, the bullets are coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And people are shooting everywhere and people are dying everywhere.
Oh yeah.
And I think, you know, there was like, and believe me, there was no comparison to what I did with, and this filmmaker, but I can't tell you how many times I will watch the end battle in Saving Private Ryan.
Oh yeah.
And just pinpoint like how Spielberg like sets these scenes up and directs this action so incredibly. Like, it's terrifying and so chaotic and so real. And you know, I feel like, you know, I went in with some ideas and, you know, watching that scene, that end battle, you know, several times and just kind of like being like, you know what, I kind of want to like capture some kind of this vibe, and obviously I'll do my own little things, but let's try doing this, you know? And so that was sort of like an inspiration, I guess, a little bit. And then, you know, just my love of action movies in general, just the weird things that I guess I haven't really seen, like a guy with a buffalo head shooting a machine gun. Like, that's cool.
That was amazing, by the way. That was really awesome. Very cool, Mike.
And, you know, it was So it was a blast, you know, being able to shoot out in the neighborhood and all that good stuff.
Yeah, absolutely. I feel like this world that you've created is very expansive, and we could follow any storyline in any several hundred directions and just go with it from there. Any thoughts on a sequel or maybe some kind of a future project set in this domestic's world?
I can tell you right now, I would love to be able to jump back into this world if somebody were to let me. And that sounds weird because maybe I just do it anyway, but again, like, I feel like being given the chance to jump back in and listen, there's so many more gangs that I have, like, in the world. There are so many other characters that I've actually already, like, written down and written their journeys about. So, I mean, this world, I feel like, does have some longevity, and to be able to go in and follow another group of domestics or another domestic, you know, like, you know, maybe it's two brothers and a sister, or maybe it's a person who decides to join a gang and it's following that storyline. Like, these are the things that I've been thinking of and I've been writing, and hey, I would love to be able to jump in and tell one of those stories.
Absolutely.
It would be so much fun.
Yeah, absolutely. I would love to follow you on that journey. So if you ever have any illusions about a Kickstarter campaign or anything like that, please keep us informed of that business. One last question.
I definitely will.
Yeah, absolutely. One last question before I let you go here, Mike. I know you got a hard out pretty soon here. My favorite character in this movie, and I think someone that'll probably be a lot of people's favorite character in this movie, had zero dialogue. I think she smiled once, but that was about it. Was that a creative choice, or did you just feel that she had nothing to say or anything like that?
It was 100% a creative choice. Like, from the beginning, there were a handful of different things with Betsy that, you know, the script went through on some variations, and the one thing that they all had in common was she never spoke.
Oh, cool.
For me, it was about capturing somebody who, you know, it's about capturing emotion without dialogue, and ultimately, you know, this character who starts to realize that there is this glimmer of hope, and her wanting to defend that. And I think that's one of the reasons why this character, you know, the character resonates with an audience, is because we all recognize that, and we all want that. We all want to defend what's good, and, you know, and she does, ultimately.
Yeah,
so.
I agree completely. Well, my friend, well done. Congratulations again on a very good movie, and a great post-apocalyptic movie that isn't a 100% bummer. I find that that's a problem we have in the post-apocalyptic world.
Oh, man, I can't agree with you more. Like, I will see as much of them as I can, but, and, you know, I hope that people feel, you know, are struck by this one and that it speaks to them, but again, like, it's a tough subgenre to tackle and do in a way that I think can reach, you know, that broad audience and say, look at this. This is something, you know, unique and different, because everybody's like, well, it's post-apocalypse, so whatever.
Absolutely.
We know what we're going to get from it. I wanted to inject a little bit of something that you're not going to expect. And so I hope that people can see that and walk away from it, you know, feeling that way.
Absolutely. I think you succeeded 110%, my friend. Where can people find the domestics? I believe it hits VOD next weekend. Is that correct?
Yeah, it hits VOD on the 29th, and then it will play in theaters in select cities. You know, it will be out in L.A., New York, Texas, Kansas City, Virginia. So it's in a handful of places around the country. Denver, Colorado, I think, is another one. Florida. So yeah, it's around, and it should be out there for a little bit of time. So if you want to catch it in a theater, which I highly recommend, please do, because it's big and loud and crazy.
Absolutely, especially the last 15 minutes. Holy cow! All right, Mike, thank you again very much for joining me here in the padded room. Inmates, do yourselves a favor. Get the domestics on VOD, or if you're in one of those cities, you're going to want to check this out as soon as you can, and you're going to thank me for introducing you to this, by the way. Mike, thank you again for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much, man. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely, and please keep us informed about any future projects, domestics or otherwise. We'd love to hear from you.
Will do.
Hit by something last night in my sleep.